Some people say that Franz Liszt called the preludes, because it was the beginning of him experimenting with the symphonic poem form. It was the third of 12 symphonic poems he wrote. We heard the Slovak Philharmonic. I'm Lynn Warfel.
Beautiful classical programming. That's what you're listening to right here on WHFR Dearborn. Good day. I'm Susan McGraw. Thank you for being a part of this lovely classical programming. I am so proud to be the person that gets to work with so many great programs and so many wonderful people here as WHFR General Manager. And it is my pleasure to invite you to be a part of our free bi-monthly publication called the WHFR Loyal Listener. If you'd like to be put on the mailing list for the WHFR Loyal Listener, all you have to do is give me a call. It's as simple as that. Call this number, 313-845-9842. Again, 313-845-9842. The Loyal Listener is a publication that comes out with programming schedule changes, events that we're participating in the community, and so much more. We'd love to have you join us as a Loyal Listener, and thank you for being a listener at that. Enjoy your day.
Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Mr. Lloyd Pye. Mr. Pye is an author, researcher, and lecturer in the field of alternative knowledge. And his broad base of knowledge spanning more than 30 years of the origin of life makes him one of the world's leading proponents of the intervention theory of origins, which stands in sharp contrast to Darwinism, creationism, and intelligent design. He is also the author of Everything You Know Is Wrong, Origins of Life and Humans, and the founder of the Star Child Project, which offers compelling evidence of extraterrestrial intervention in human evolution. So welcome to the show, Mr. Pye.
Well, thank you for having me on, David. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's our pleasure, indeed. Tell us about the Star Child Project. Tell our listeners all about that.
Well, the Star Child Project is something that I undertook about 10 years ago, and this month, actually, on the 18th, it'll be 10 years ago that I saw a very strange skull that some people had in El Paso, Texas. Mm. And it had an interesting story behind it, how it had come to them, but they wanted my opinion of it. And when I first saw it and held it and saw the oddness of it, the strangeness of it, I knew enough about skulls to realize that I was looking at something really very special, not just your standard human deformity, although that's what I believed it was at first. It just couldn't be anything else, really, in my mind. But what they wanted me to do was try to determine that for sure, because it was just so strange. Mm-hmm. And I undertook to do it, thinking it would be a matter of a few months to get that issue squared away. And here we are 10 years later, on the verge of possibly, very likely, in fact, proving that this thing is indeed a human-alien hybrid rather than a human deformity. So it's been a pretty exciting 10 years, lots of ups and downs, but all along the way, pretty much moving in the direction that we're moving in now toward a final conclusion, we hope, this year. So it's a pretty exciting time for us.
Okay, now you say it. You thought it was a human deformity,
right?
A child that was physically deformed, correct?
Well, we didn't know at first that it was a child. Later, that the first round of testing that we did on it was a very sophisticated round of X-rays, mm-hmm. which are one of the easiest to do. And when we did that, we found that the piece of upper maxilla that we had. The upper right maxilla is the part of your face that is your upper right jaw, including your teeth. And we had that for the star child, and in its the bone of that, we saw teeth. There were teeth clear in the X-ray. And there were also two teeth down still in the holes, and the empty holes had clearly held teeth. So the argument then was, well, if it's teeth down and teeth up, you're looking at a child. Hmm. And so we thought then it probably was a child, but later determined that that had been a misaccurate read.
How's that?
Well, because later we found out that the teeth themselves that were down were very well worn and had deep and very strong roots. A child's teeth are not like that. As a child's teeth are about to come out, and they have their roots dissolve back into the bone and go to make the subsequent teeth that are going to come out and be permanent teeth. So these were obviously permanent teeth. Once we pulled one of them and could see it, we realized, boy, these are clearly permanent teeth. And also in looking at high magnification of the surface of the teeth, you could see that they were chipped and modeled and had cracks in the enamel, things that children don't have them in their mouths long enough and don't have the strength, the chewing muscles, to generate. So pretty clear later that this was a being, while it had permanent teeth, it maintained teeth up in its maxilla to go down and replace those teeth, apparently, if any of them were needed. They were going to have, it certainly wasn't the human cycle of teeth as we understand it.
Okay, so I'm a little confused here. We're calling it the star child, but it was not a child.
And, right. That's exactly right. It was called a child for its time. When we initially, the first test was X-rays, so we were told it's a child.
Okay.
The X-rays. So the experts said it's a child, so we said, okay, we'll call it the star child. Mm-hmm. So a year or two later, after more detailed examination by people who knew a little more about dental, how dentition looks,
right?
They said, no, it's not a child. It's an adult. These are adult teeth. Once again, we pulled the tooth, and the surfaces were able to be analyzed very carefully. Mm. Just to look at it, to X-ray it, look at it. You see teeth down. You see teeth up. You think a child. Then later, we determined that was. This is very different than the human model, whatever this is, not the way humans do it.
But the size of the skull would have suggested that of a child, is that correct?
Right. The size of the skull is about a standard 12-year-old adult of today, or an adult who's going to reach about a maximum of 5 feet tall, a small human being.
Okay.
That's the size of that skull.
But how can you rule out pygmy or midget or dwarf or,
Well, you can't. In terms of that, you really can't. That's what I said. It's the size of a 12-year-old. I don't really know, frankly, about pygmies and midgets, but certainly that would be a possibility. Somebody small, it's the size of a head of someone that should have a brain of about 1,200 cubic centimeters, and that's about a 12-year-old or small adult, as opposed to, say, you or I, if we're average size, we have about 1,400 cubic centimeters of brain in our skulls.
Okay,
so
that's
that
average.
While the circumference and the volume equals a small person or right. a child or I guess a pygmy or a dwarf or whatever, the actual volume of the brain inside the star child's head is very different than, again, a normal human being. And you and I would be, as I said, 1,400 at average, 1,400 cubic centimeters. A person or a being the size of the star child should have about 1,200 cubic centimeters. And, in fact, the star child has about 1,600 cubic centimeters of brain in that head, like 400 cubic centimeters more than it ought to have. Hmm. So it's a huge difference. It's so much more brain in there than ought to be there within the given volume that it has. So that tells you that it's very rearranged inside itself, inside the head, compared to the human model.
Okay.
And David, what makes this thing so special is that every time you look at any physiological aspect of a human skull, the star child is substantially different, which is why as we began to chip these things away one by one and make these discoveries one by one, we began to realize, look, this thing really probably isn't human. Hmm. And we began to try to look for ways to try to establish that scientifically to a degree that everybody could agree was confirmable. And so that's what we've been doing for the past 10 years and what we stand on the verge of being able to complete now this year.
Well, who is it? Are you qualified to look at these things, or did you have someone who was qualified to look at it? If so, who was that?
I certainly wouldn't be, but we've had probably 60 various kinds of academic specialists, scientists of different kinds, go over it very carefully and render their opinions about the various aspects of it in which they specialize.
Mm.
So, you know, we've had dentists, we've had ophthalmologists, we've had brain specialists, we've had anthropologists, we've had just about anything you can, forensic pathologists, just about anything you can name. And we've also had a lot of them that just wouldn't deal with it at all, that we've approached and they just wouldn't have anything to do with it.
Why not?
Well, because it goes off onto, you know, in the third, they say Social Security is the third rail of politics.
Mm.
If you put your hand on Social Security, your political career is dead. Well, in science, the third rail is UFOs and aliens. If you put your hand on that, you are dead.
Mm.
And so it takes scientists with real courage to agree to deal with and leave, you know, put their name on the findings that they produce relative to something like the star child. So it took quite a lot of effort to find those courageous few individuals among their peers that had the cojones to do it. It's asking an awful lot of them to risk peer disapproval and all that comes with it for getting involved in something like this.
Well, then they must have known that something was abnormal to begin with.
Absolutely.
When they say,
think anybody can look at it, David, that knows anything about the field or the subject
mm-hmm.
and not know immediately what it might well be. And though those individuals would say to me, it's a cradle-boarded hydrocephalic or some, they throw up some other kind of deformity, and you should just take it home and go away and forget about it.
And leave me alone.
They would go home, I'm sure, to their wives or their significant others and say, you won't believe what I saw today. I'm sure most of them knew or had a very good idea what they were looking at, and they know it's trouble, and they don't want to deal with it.
So outside of the fact that now, of course, the brain is already dust by now, but they're able to tell what size of brain was in that
Right.
Cavity.
All you have to do is, with any skull, really, David, nothing special about this one, is you take a section of garbage bag. In fact, as a matter of fact, we're going to be on the show UFO Hunters at the end of on the History Channel at the end of March, and you'll see this test done, they tell me, where you take a piece of garbage bag and you put it through the neck hole, and you blow it down in there so that you get it tucked into all, as far as you can, into the various nooks and crannies, and you pour flaxseed or some other kind of bird seed in and fill the volume of the head, and then you pour it out and you measure it, and that's how you determine the volume of the brain.
I'll be there. Now, are you going to be on UFO Hunters?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You are,
I'm going to be on explaining it to people the way I'm explaining to you now. Now, I can't, I don't know how they're going to edit it, the film that we shot. We filmed it about, I think, 4 weekends ago, this coming weekend, in Houston. So last week in March, they tell me, is the most likely date, so people can look for it. It's an episode about gray aliens, gray aliens, and we'll be a part of that episode.
It's kind of coincidental. I really didn't. This sounds like I set this up this way. I didn't, believe me, listeners. But it so happens that we had Bill Burns on the show last month.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, yep. Bill was the guy right there. But now, Bill, keep in mind, there's a little tidbit about Bill.
Okay.
When I first picked the skull up, it was first given to me back in 1998. It was very early 1998.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, 1999. In middle 1999, I had it out in L.A., and I called Bill and the UFO magazine people, him and his wife, Nancy, and some of their staff, and I said, you know, I'm going to have it here. You ought to come take a look at it. And bless them, they did. They came to the motel, and we spent about 3 hours going over it, and this is when we knew next to nothing about it. But even they could see, you know, and they knew, and as I explained what little I knew then, they could see that, wow, this really is special. And so they ended up doing a cover story on it back then.
What about DNA tests? Have you ever had that?
Yeah. We've had DNA tests done. And as a matter of fact, that's what is coming up this year, the final one. But DNA, this is kind of a long story, David, and it's complex. So
go ahead.
I want to make sure that your listeners understand where there are two types of DNA testing that you can do. In most every cell in your body, this is the way it looks. Kind of imagine a baseball or a golf ball or anything like that that has an outer covering and a core. Well, in the outer covering, outside the core, from the outside cell wall to the inside of the nucleus of the cell, you have some cytoplasm floating around in there, and in that cytoplasm are embedded, like raisins in a pudding or something, little chips of DNA called mitochondrial DNA. Now, that comes from your mother only. That's passed down from mothers only. Inside the core, in the middle, is the nucleus of the cell. Inside the nucleus is the entire genomic package of that individual, and that is the entire genome passed to them by their parents. So that amounts to all 46 chromosomes, 23 coming from mother, 23 coming from father. In the neighborhood of 25,000 genes, they're still counting them, but in that range, 25,000 genes, and approximately 3 billion, B with a B, 3 billion base pairs to make up the whole genome. Now, again, floating outside in the mitochondria, there are only about 16,000 base pairs long. So they're very small relative to the 3 billion base pairs, which are the smallest unit that genetics breaks down into. So the mitochondrial has 16,000 base pairs, and the nucleus has 3 billion coming from mother and father, whereas the mitochondria comes only from the mother. Now, if you understand that much, when we went to have the Star Child's DNA tested, What they found was that its mitochondrial DNA came up very clearly and very easily when being recovered, and its mother was clearly a human being. And she was from a what is called haplogroup C, which is what Native Americans cluster as one of five groups: haplogroup A, B, C, D, and sometimes X, which is a kind of a rare one. But nonetheless, the star child's mother came from haplogroup C. Now, we carbon dated the skulls, and so we know that they're about 900 years old. They died about 900 years ago. Mm-hmm. So 900 years ago in Mexico, again, they were found in Mexico, so that's around the Copper Canyon area, about 100 miles southwest of Chihuahua. At that time, haplogroup C, there's nothing unusual about that. So very typical mother from the area, nothing odd about that. But when it came time to do the nuclear DNA, which was to recover the DNA of both the mother and the father, when they tried to do that, it wouldn't come up. The primers, the human-only primers, didn't work. Not one time, not two times, but six times. They did it that many times to make absolutely sure nothing was going wrong. The father's DNA did not register on the screen. I mean, did not register in the gel. So what that meant was, as the geneticist said, there's something highly unusual with the father of this being. He's not normal. He's not a normal human being.
He's not human, well, is what you're saying.
Not human. That's what we think. He's not a human being. But all they could say at that point was he's a very deviant human being away from the human norm, because the human-only primers would not pick him up. So you know the star child's mother is human. So if the father's human, it should have been an easy pickup, and we would have been done in 2003. When we finally were able to get that test done.
Wow.
But because it wasn't, they said, you really have something here, but we can't tell you what this thing is. We can only tell you what it's not.
Mm-hmm.
In order to be able to tell what it is, you have to be able to recover all of its genome, base pair by base pair, all 3 billion base pairs. And we don't have any technology in place right now that is even close to that. And I just, you know, threw my hands up. Well, what can we do? They said, well, if you wait 3 to 5 years, there's going to be a test developed that is going to recover on a base pair by base pair arrangement an entire genome of an unknown species. And he said, we're inventing that. We're working on inventing that because we want to know, meaning geneticists collectively, want to know what the Neanderthal genome was like. Which at that time they had no way to recover because they didn't know how to make primers for it. You have to know how to make the primers you have to have something that's already there to give you the basis to make primers, which are strings of DNA, strings of base pairs rather, that are about several hundred to several thousand base pairs long. That's what primers are. They're like keys that fit in locks. So the human keys did not fit in the star child's father's locks. So we needed to recover all of his genome, base pair by base pair, like they were going to do to the Neanderthal. Well, sure enough, 3 years later, in 2006, they announced, a company called 454 Life Sciences announced that they had broken the code, and they had the ability to do that now, to recover base pair by base pair, and they were going to start working on the Neanderthal very soon. And they've been working on the Neanderthal for the last couple of years to the tune of several million dollars. Well, the price of it, as the machines have proliferated, the price has dropped considerably. It's down to around $250,000 now. So we're within the range of being able to do it to the star child skull, and we have a documentary company in England that is arranging, putting together the money to do the testing and to shoot a documentary about that testing to be done this year. So we're pretty close now to being able to recover the star child's entire genome. And when we do that, we will be able to say to people, the star child falls at this spot X away from human beings. Now, the question is, how far will that be? A chimp is 3% away from 100%. In other words, a human is 100%. A chimp is 97% the same. Mm-hmm. So only 3% difference. A gorilla is 95% the same, only 5% difference. So where does the Neanderthal fall? Well, of course, science believes that the Neanderthal is going to fall very close to human beings. I personally believe it's going to fall much closer to chimps, but that remains to be seen. But the star child will also have a place on that line eventually, hopefully later this year, where we will be able to say it is X percentage points away from a human being. And if it's any more than just a fraction of 1% away from human, it's not entirely human. And when you look at the physiology of the skull, it's so different. You've got like 24 major physiological differences in the star child skull from a normal human skull. And each of those differences has to be the result of genes telling it to grow that way differently. So if it's got that many genes different just in the head, try to imagine through the whole body.
Right.
So that being the case, we're very confident that the star child's genome is going to be substantially different than a human being's, thereby proving that it was the father was not a human being. And that's really, there you go. That's the
But they won't be able to say what it was, huh?
Well, they won't be able to say what kind of alien it was, just that it was not
human beings,
and it was far enough away to be, you can't call it anything but an alien. And it looks so much like a gray, David, let's keep in mind, the star child skull looks very much like the standard depiction of a gray alien.
We're going to explore that in a minute, Mr. Pye. I'm sorry I'm going to have to interrupt here.
No problem.
And we're going to have to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM. The only station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with Mr. Lloyd Pye, head of the Star Child Project. And we're going to continue with that conversation right after this. Please don't go away.
You take your six-year-old to the playground. You watch her run from the slide to the swings. Another mother strikes up a conversation. You take your eye off your daughter for a few seconds. You look back. And she's gone.
Lily? Lily?
Every parent knows that feeling. Imagine if she were actually abducted. To receive free Amber Alerts on your cell phone, go to wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. Brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
Animation, illustration, multimedia design, print design, web design, plug in to graphic design department at Henry Ford Community College. The new graphic design program is full of choices. 5 new tracks, 5 new certificate programs, an associate degree program with 5 areas of concentration, and flexible class schedules that meet the needs of busy people. For more information, contact the Graphic Design Department at 313-845-6487 or graphicdesign@hfcc.edu. Graphic Design at Henry Ford Community College. Plug in.
Now, somebody should have told you about Detroit's official underground hip-hop. That's the Zone Radio with a Richardson, D.C. Every Saturday night from 8 p.m. to midnight. You're right here on the station making waves across the Great Lakes. 89.3 WH.FM. Who else brings it like this? Get with the Zone.
Stay updated. Stay in the zone.
This is WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. And I'm Dave Twitchell. And you're listening to You're Not Alone. We're speaking with Mr. Lloyd Pye. He is an author, lecturer, and the head of the Star Child Project, a skull that they've discovered, a 900-year-old skull, that they can prove that the mother was human and really don't quite know who the daddy was. Am I correct, Mr. Pye?
That's it exactly, indeed.
But we're going to find out, possibly, or find out that we never will know or may not know if the father was human hopefully this year. Is that what you were saying?
Yep, that's it. We have a test lined up. We know, you know, what the results ought to be, mm-hmm. and it's just a matter of getting the money, arranging for the time slot. It's about a 3-month project, though. 3 billion base pairs is an awful lot to recover, so it takes 3 to 4 months to get it done. But that's, you know, it's wonderful news. And by the way, if your listeners would like to see some pictures of it, we have loads of them on the Star Child website, www.starchildproject.com. You can see all kinds of views of it and have explanations of what you're looking at. So that's one thing. And for those who are interested in really learning about it as much as you can, there is a book called The Star Child Skull, which is available on that website. All you have to do is go and click on it and just follow the leads about how to purchase the book.
Right.
But it's a very good book, and it tells the whole story of the different tests and what went into getting them and the background of the story about how the Star Child came to be discovered, how it came into my possession. Everything that can be covered about the story has been covered in that book, and I would recommend it to anyone with an interest in having an understanding of what's going to be really, I'm sure, a very historic event mm-hmm. when the testing is carried out.
That's starchildproject.com, right?
Starchildproject, all one word, .com.
Exactly. I've seen the pictures of the skull, and tell us about how the eye sockets are different than humans. Are they different than humans?
Oh, the eye sockets are one of the more different aspects of the skull. They are much shallower. A standard human eye socket, or any primate really, is a very deep cone that goes into the head about 2 full inches. You know, hold your forefinger up and measure off into the middle knuckle, the second knuckle, and that's about how deep your finger goes into the eye socket, if not more so.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty deep, and at the back end of that cone are the openings for the foramen. Optic foramens and the optic nerve and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of to the rear of that cone shaped thing. The Star Childs are very shallow. They're like scoops taken out of the bone rather than something going very deep. They go less than your first knuckle of your finger. They're about 3/4 of an inch,
mm-hmm.
not even a full inch. And at their deepest point. And instead of the optic foramens being back at the center of the cone like they are, they've been shoved down and to the inside of the nose in a very completely different arrangement. However, and this is what's really unique about them, they are absolutely symmetrical, those eye sockets. I had them, those skulls, the skull with me for perhaps 6 weeks. And my father was an optometrist, and I brought it to him, and he started playing around, feeling around inside, and I just never thought to do that. Put my finger inside. You know, we all have that prescription in childhood: don't stick your fingers in anybody's eye.
Right,
you know?
Except your own.
I just never did it. And my dad started playing around, and he pointed out that had convolutions in there that I might want to have checked out by ophthalmologists, because he felt that they felt to him like something where muscles might attach.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. I took it to an ophthalmologist in Nebraska, and he really got down to it, and he found that the little depressions in there that you cannot see with your eyes, you can feel with your fingers, and they're perfectly symmetrical. So those eyes, for as, quote, deformed as a specialist might tell you they are, they are, in fact, exactly precisely the way they were meant to be, and that they were told to grow by that creature's genes.
Mm.
So right there we know that the whole suite of genes that create an eye socket are different from a human being. So, and it's the same way all over the head. I mean, and just every area you want to talk about is different from a human being. So that's how we know, just on the physiology alone, that this skull is not really a human being.
Well, they must have
got human in it,
yeah.
But it's not really a human being.
They must have used a microscope also somewhere along the line.
Oh, we did. We used a scanning electron microscope.
Okay.
And we finally When we finally cut into it, David, at the end of 99 and began to break it into pieces to do analysis on it and to...
Wait a minute. You say break it into pieces. We're talking not literally, are we?
No.
Thank goodness.
Cut pieces out and then cut those into pieces.
Pictures.
And use them for different test procedures, right. And one of which was to put them under a scanning electron microscope to see what we could see and to do the chemistry, the biochemistry analysis that you do that way,
mm-hmm.
And found out that the bone is really, really very unique in a number of ways. The bone itself is half as thick as normal human bone. It weighs half as much, and yet it's two or three times stronger, two or three times as durable as normal human bone. Very hard, very, very hard for such thin little bone. So we were very puzzled by that when we were cutting, you know, like, why this? So later under the scanning electron microscope, they found out that while it has most of the chemistry of standard human bone, the big difference is that it has a lot more collagen than does human bone. And what does that make it? It makes the star child's bone much more like tooth enamel, like just a big shell of tooth enamel than normal human bone. That's why one of the reasons it's so much harder. Also, though, while under the scanning electron microscope, we found that there are fibers of some kind, very durable fibers, embedded in the bone itself, in the matrix of the bone, that are clear and evident. You can see the pictures on the Star Child Project website. And those are not found in any other species of bone that anybody knows about. And so right then, when we found that out in 2003, people should have been jumping up and down and saying, glory, hallelujah. But it was like, you know, science doesn't want this particular piece of information, David. That's the key here. Science doesn't want this piece of information to come out on their watch because it means they're going to have to deal with it, explain it away, try to incorporate it into what they already have. It's just going to be a mess for them, and they know it, and they just don't want to do it.
Well,
going to have to really cram it down their throats, but that's how it always is with major breakthroughs in any field.
Yeah.
It always goes in over the screaming howls of disapproval of the mainstream science status quo at the time. So we're no different in what we're doing than people in the past have been.
Mm.
We're going to have to do this climbing over their protests and, you know, their howls of outrage and all of that, and we're prepared to do it.
Well, you're a scientist yourself, and
no, actually, I'm not. We have a thing down here in the South. I'm grew up in Louisiana, and I live in Florida, and we have something called shade tree mechanics, and those are the guys that just will take your car and put it in the back of their house under a shade tree and work on it. They know cars as good as any certified mechanic, but you know, I think I'm like a shade tree anthropologist or whatever. I've learned an awful, awful lot, but I don't pretend to be an expert in that sense. I try to go after the forest rather than the tree. Those guys learn a tree, and that's their tree, and they really know it inside out. And I try to look at a whole bunch of trees and make some sense out of the forest.
Well, this brings up Yeah, this brings up the question: what you must have been attacked by the skeptics and the naysayers. How do they try to explain this skull in light of the evidence you have?
They just say it has to be a deformity of some kind because we do not allow yet for the existence of alien life. So if there is no alien life possible, then this, no matter how strange it is, has to be some kind of human deformity. In the same way, look what they did with The Hobbit, okay? Let's look at The Hobbit, which everybody's familiar with. They find a little 3-foot person in a skeleton of a fossil of a 3-foot person in Indonesia standing upright. That has to be a human being of some kind. Mm-hmm. And yet, it has not a human bone in it, not a human bone that can be compared to a human bone in terms of thickness, density, length. You know, there are differences. And particularly in the skull, it's got the big brow ridges, the no forehead, the big round night vision eyes. It's got in every way the look of a prehuman up through Neanderthal. It doesn't in any way look human, and yet they have to consider it a human because it's only 18,000 years old. If it's only 18,000 years old, that has to be some kind of dwarf, deformed, weird human. So they're trying to shoehorn this thing, and not just one now. They have several now that they've found. Not just one. Now they're calling it a tribe of deformed humans. It's just utterly ridiculous. But in order for them to maintain their facade of understanding of life on Earth, they have to make the hobbits fit in as human beings. Well, same thing with the Star Child, exactly. No matter what, they can't concede alien life until there's no choice. When there is no choice, then they will all agree that, well, okay, we've been, you know, shown the light, and now we're going to move in a different direction. It's the old deal about if we stick together, we'll all hang together. If we break up, we'll all hang individually.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier for them to all say we were all wrong, we were all fooled, we all, you know, made a mistake. Then it's not such a big mistake.
But they won't.
But if they start breaking ranks, then they have real problems.
You know what they'll say at that point in time?
What?
We knew it all the time.
Yeah, right. I don't think they're going to get away with that. But it's pretty clear that they didn't know it all the time,
right,
and didn't want to deal with it all the time. Because
right,
they've had 10 years. I mean, if they knew it all the time, we've had, you know, given them plenty of opportunity to take it seriously and really dig into it, and have not been able to get anybody to do it. So
well,
we've had to pay, you know, pretty much every bit of the way.
Maybe with this new administration, we'll have a little bit more openness, and maybe there will be disclosure. Who knows? I'm going to have to take one more break before the end of the show, and remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, station making waves here in Dearborn out of Henry Ford Community College, 89.3 FM on your radio dial, and WHFR.FM on your computer worldwide. So I'm David Twitchell, and we're all listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with Mr. Lloyd Pye on the Star Child Project. And there's one other topic I want to talk to him about. That's his book, Everything You Know Is Wrong. So if you want to know how wrong you are, stick around, and right after this non-commercial break, we'll be back with our guest, Mr. Lloyd Pye.
Red Defender, thank goodness you're here. That huge asteroid is headed right towards Earth.
I'll handle this.
Like an arrow shot from a man-sized bow, the Red Defender hurtles into space using his super strength to stop the asteroid.
He's stopping the asteroid. It's moving away from Earth. You saved us. How did you do it?
I just stopped the asteroid and reversed its course back into space.
Look, the moon! It's exploded!
Where exactly did you throw that asteroid?
Away. I threw it away.
No more moon. That means no more tides. Tides are created by the moon.
And no more walks in the moonlight. I love walks in the moonlight.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. To find out more, go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Performing arts are an important facet of life. There is no substitute for the relationship between audience and performer. Your contributions to the Henry Ford Community College Theater Program enable students and faculty to continue promoting HFCC's artistic standards. By becoming a member of the Friends of HFCC Theater, you are allowing the theater program to prosper through establishing a scholarship fund, improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a Friend of HFCC Theater, call
813-845-6478. 89.3 WHFR.FM is proud to be the station bringing you the nationally syndicated show, Mountain Stage. Hosted by Larry Gross every Sunday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., Mountain Stage brings exclusive live performances from a diverse list of musicians from folk, bluegrass, jazz, roots, blues, and more. Past guests have included Buddy Guy, Carrie Noble, Katie Lang, Arlo Guthrie, and so many more. For more information about Mountain Stage, visit mountainstage.org or just tune in every Sunday from 1 to 3. p.m. on this very station. That's Mountain Stage, where musicians come to play. WHFR.FM, bringing you the best music on the airwaves for 20 years and counting.
And welcome back to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Lloyd Pye of the Star Child Project. And as advertised here, your book, Everything You Know Is Wrong. Tell us about that. What's that about?
Well, that book, I have to tell you, is right now out of print. It was in print for about 10 years, and it sold many thousands of copies, but I knew that I was going to be revising it and bringing out a new edition of it in another year or so. So I let it go out of print in 2007 so that people, there wouldn't be that close a lag time. It is, you know, one of the better books, I think, in our field. And it covers hominoids, which is, it's like the cliff notes on a number of subjects that are of interest. How life began on Earth and how it all started. Hominoids, which is Bigfoot, the abominable snowman, and all of that. And then in part four, the work of Zechariah Sitchin. So it's sort of a layman's text for these subjects, and it makes them as clear and as boiled down and as concise as they can be. And I think that's what's made the book as popular as it's been, is just that it makes these things understandable to people that want to know more about it but don't have time to dig through all of the research that's out there, because there's an awful lot about it.
Okay, so you're going to have an updated version in
next
year?
The updated version should be out in 2010, in that range, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. And they can find out more about that by going to LloydPye.com?
LloydPye.com, exactly.
P-Y-E.
Or you can write from there, from the Star Child website. All of my websites are connected, so not really a problem to move around. But yes, Lloyd, www.LloydPye, LloydPye, instead of P-I-E, so LloydPye.com, and you can find about Everything You Know Is Wrong, and if you need to contact me about it, my email address is there, or it's lloyd@lloydpye.com.
Very good. And tell us a little bit about what's going to be in that book, in that Everything We Know Is Wrong, about archaeology, biology?
Yeah, it's going to be, it goes through basically the beginnings of life on Earth and how, and particularly human origins, and the theme of it is that humans are not native to planet Earth. And it's pretty obvious when you look at the evidence that we are a constructed species that came here only in the very recent past, within the last 200,000 years, as Cro-Magnons. And up to then, what science tells us are prehumans, or in fact not prehumans at all. They are the fossils of today's living hominoids, which are, again, Bigfoot, the abominable snowman, and the two other kinds, including the hobbits that are out there. People just basically, David, have no real understanding of the truth of the situation. You say Bigfoot and everybody laughs. Oh, that's stupid. Oh, that's silly. The evidence for it is overwhelming, and all someone has to do is just look at that, the footprint evidence and how strong it is, and the sightings and the Patterson-Gimlin film and the Minnesota Iceman and many other stories that aren't really popularly well-known but are very well-known around the world. Xana, the one in Russia. There are great stories out there, great evidence in favor of their reality. So if they're real, then humans have no place on the flowchart of life on Earth, and so that's what I discuss in those parts of the book. And then, so if we're new here, how'd we get here? Who put us here? How did all that happen? And part four goes into what I believe is the evidence, which I think is overwhelming, of our genetic engineering, not just us, but all domesticated plants and animals, by beings who came to our planet and wanted to live here and make a life here, but it wasn't suited to them, so they changed a lot of things to make it suit them, and they did that in genetic labs, and we are a product of that creation.
Well, like you say, that's Sitchin's also Sitchin's work.
Sitchin had a lot to do with that, but I take Sitchin and I boil it down to the essence, and then I expand outward from there, bringing in things and science that he doesn't necessarily deal with. You know, he's one guy working alone, I'm one guy working alone.
Right.
He put us all together. Right. We began to get a really strong picture of what was going on, right. and we all stand on each other's shoulders and make room for someone else to stand on out. Eventually, the truth is going to come out, but I can assure you that everything you think you know now about it, if you don't know about any of this, is wrong. And we may not be correct in the detail of what we say, but we're an awful lot closer to the truth than anything is putting out right now.
Right, right. So, bottom line, you think that what you're saying in your book is that conclusion that we're hybrids, comprise of earthly simian DNA and that of extraterrestrial race. Is that it?
Exactly. The same thing I think we're going to find in the Star Child in different proportions, I think, is very clear. That those the 3% difference or whatever it is between us and chimps and gorillas and all that, when you begin to break it down, you're going and you know, it's pretty clear right now that we've got a couple of hundred genes that are not seen in any other species on Earth.
Oh yeah.
The key elements that make us what we are going to be from alien species, not from planet Earth. And I think that's pretty clear to anybody that knows anything about how we are constructed genetically.
You know, I had read, in fact, I put in my first book that there are 23 extra chromosomes. I believe I'm saying the right number here. 23 extra chromosomes in the human. Everything from apes to yeast on the Earth is basically the same genetic makeup, but humans have 23 extra chromosomes. We can't figure out where they came from. Is that correct?
No. That's really not correct. There are several genes, but what you're confusing with the chromosomes is that all of the higher primates that we supposedly descend from have 48 chromosomes, meaning 24 from each parent, and we humans inexplicably have 46 chromosomes, which is 23 from each parent. So where did those two chromosomes go? Because a chromosome is comprised of an awful lot of DNA. And so how can we be the same as a chimp except for 3% and the same as a gorilla except for 5% if we've lost two whole chromosomes from what they have?
Okay.
They have two more chromosomes than us. That absolutely makes no sense whatsoever.
That's where I was getting the 23 from.
The answer is that our second and third primate chromosomes, what are the second and third chromosomes in a primate in human beings, have been fused together end to end in a genetics lab. And so scientists can't say, well, that clearly had to be done in a genetics lab because nature can't do anything like that. So they have found other examples of fused together genes, but they find them in domesticated plants and animals, which were also created in labs the same way we were. So nature doesn't really do that. Nature doesn't stick chromosomes end to end perfectly so that the telomeres on the other two ends are intact, and you know, all the weird things. And also we have 9 inversions in other parts of our chromosomes where something cut them, lifted those pieces out and turned them in on end and put them back in. Nature doesn't do that either. We are clearly a genetically modified species, but again, science just cannot allow that until it gets crammed down their throats, so it's just not talked about and it's not really acknowledged openly.
Right. Well, I have suggested too that that's indeed what has happened, is that Darwin is right in that we are evolution from an ape or an ape-like being. However, it wasn't evolutionary. The missing link, for example. What about the missing link?
Well, there is no missing link in any species that you can name, and in fact, Darwin isn't right. Darwin's wrong, real wrong. So the thing about the idea that things improve due to mutations, the gradual accumulation of positive mutations, if you know anything about that, you know, and science admits this, that there are way, way, way more negative mutations than positive mutations. Positives come in every once in a blue moon. Negatives come in very regularly, meaning this thing is bad. If you got a mutation, the odds on it doing anything to improve anything are vanishingly small on a percentage basis.
Yeah.
So if everything didn't have a way of getting rid of those bad mutations or good mutations, they don't accept mutations very often. at all. But for the most part, everything should be degenerating, spiraling downward, just because there's so many more negatives than there are positives. But that isn't what happens. Things come into existence, and if they're in the wild and in nature, they pretty much stay the way they are. You know, lions stay lions, tigers stay tigers, elephants stay elephants. You know, you go mastodons, elephants, but they're all sort of in the same family, and they're not that different from each other. So you can have some degree of change, some degree, Darwin's finches and all that. But the, you know, that's microevolution. Everyone agrees microevolution is evident. But what Darwin was saying was that there was macroevolution, that things could evolve so many, you could accumulate so many changes that you would turn into something else entirely, some new, quote, higher species. That really, there's no evidence for that. That's the missing link that science has been looking for 150 years this year, and they still don't have it. And they're never going to have it. It doesn't exist. Darwin was just wrong, and sooner or later that's going to have to be faced by science as well.
But the Darwin part that I was getting at was the fact that a simian race was involved, except it was the host by an extraterrestrial being that used this earthly simian
race. I agree with that. They used the earthly simian
as a whole
model as a basis. But, you know, I think, you know, in a lab you can make any percentage you want of mix. You can make, instead of, you know, 50-50, 60-40, 30-70, which is sort of the natural way of doing it via, you know, sexual combination. In a lab you can make it 95-5 if you want. You can make it 90-10 if you want. You can make it 80-20 or... You can do anything you want if you know what you're doing.
Right.
So, yes, there is a part of us that is native to planet Earth. But really, human beings compared to primates, and I go over in the book Everything You Know Is Wrong and in other places, how many incredible differences we have compared to primates. It's clear that we're just something so totally different. We have to be from another planet. There's just no way we can be from planet Earth as part of the primate stock. Only a small part of us is partly part of the primate stock.
Right. Yeah, there's this little girl, they tout this thing, creationism touts this thing where this little girl, so rightly cited, if evolution, humans come from apes, why are there still apes? Well, for goodness sake, there are still there are zebras, or rather there are donkeys, but there are still, you know, there are mules, but there's still donkeys and horses, for goodness sake. So
I don't think anybody that on the evolution side of things claims that we evolved from apes directly. We all, us and apes and chimps, I mean us and chimps and gorillas, evolved from a common ancestor.
Right.
That we all shared a common ancestor at one point,
right,
and we evolved in our own separate directions from that common ancestor. That's
right.
What they say.
Yeah.
But that's really just not possible because we're so far away from the primates. They are so close together, basically, just basic. The real difference with them is more or less size. We are hugely, hugely different from them. We're as different from chimps and gorillas as the star child is from us, physiologically, and it goes from there. So in the same way that we're alien compared to them, the star child's alien compared to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you got my contact information. When you have that DNA testing done on the star child, you say this is the final one, the final DNA test. Is that it?
Right. But understand, though, David, this is going to be worldwide news. This is, you know, this isn't going to be just type it into the email list, to the Star Child, you know, email list. It's like big news everywhere.
Do you think they will put this news out? I mean,
Yeah. I don't see how they can't. It'll be on, you know, the British documentary will be out there going out over the airwaves, so they really won't have much choice. And it will be a huge news story, I'm sure.
So many people, you know, with UFOs, they say they saw the UFO, they saw a crash, they saw the bodies, and they say, boy,
yeah,
I'm going to hear about
always,
this.
That's just testimony. This is DNA. This is the weapon of science.
I know,
this is the test of science. This is the one that puts you on death row and gets you off death row. Science can't argue with this, and they know it, and we know it. So this is what makes the Star Child so important.
I hope you're right, Lloyd, but you know what? I think they're going to try to bury it.
Well, they can do, you know, they can make every attempt. But they've had 10 years, and David, I got to tell you, if they were going to do it, they've had plenty of opportunity up to now, and they haven't yet. And I have no idea why they've let it go as far forward as they have, but I'm now of the opinion that they're just going to let it go through because so many people know about it.
Yeah.
I don't know how you put this particular horse back in the barn once it's been out this far.
Mr. Lloyd Pye, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, and I hope we can do this again sometime.
Well, thank you very much, David. I'll look forward to it.
And it's LloydPye.com, P-Y-E, LloydPye.com, or StarChildProject.com. Thanks again, Mr. Pye. Take care.
All right. Thank you very much, David.
Bye-bye. And if you have any questions or comments for me, write to me at dtwitchell, email me, that is, at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show is, well, as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR's website, whfr.fm. Click on the forum button on the homepage. And We Are Not Alone is now archived at Black Vault Radio, as well as on my website, UFOImplications.com. That's UFOImplications.com. And stay tuned to WHFR for the best in alternative music. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
And good afternoon, or actually it's still morning. It is 11 a.m. right here in beautiful